At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. We're going back to the topic of retrofitting, which is one that certainly we've reckoned from previous experience many of you are very interested in. Recently, we covered a report by the ESRI, which looked into public attitudes to retrofitting and which showed disruption to home life during retrofit works is a major potential barrier to some households upgrading the energy efficiency of their homes. But when we did the item, lots of you came in on the issue of cost again. So we're joined from the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland by the head of its National Retrofit Unit, Dr. Ciarán Byrne. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Matt, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Define a retrofit for me, because I've been hearing from people about doing external retrofits, internal retrofits. What is it?
Exactly. Well, I think it's anything to do with increasing and improving the energy performance of your home. So you can start at the very basic level, which is putting attic insulation in, right up to the kind of the gold-plated level, which is what we call the one-stop shop, and doing the entire retrofit, the total energy improvement of your home, all in one go.
Which would involve what? Does that mean insulating your windows or changing your windows? Does it mean somebody said to me about the possibility of doing external insulation rather than actually coming inside the house to try and do internal insulation?
Exactly. So what it actually means is in retrofit, there's a range of measures. So when you look at a home, so the home is effectively four walls and a roof. And what we would do is we'd look at the energy performance of your home as it currently is, and then you add on the measures. So typically in a four walls and a roof, you're looking at insulation. So first of all, attic insulation. If you're looking at walls, you have a number of options. You can put external wall insulation. For a number of homes, they have what they call a cavity. So there's two wall blocks and you can pump the cavity. So where those two options aren't available to you, people do internal insulation. And so in terms of the journey, people can start at, as I said, a simple level of attic insulation, go all the way up to doing all of the measures in the home to get it up to what we want to get them to is a B2 level of energy performance.
And what about windows?
Windows are part of the package, but in terms of doing it, windows are one element of a wall. And what we recommend is get the wall measures done first, because just doing the windows, which people love to see windows, putting really good windows into a poorly insulated wall doesn't make a whole lot of difference in terms of the energy performance.
Okay. And so you're saying is that the better thing to do, if possible, is to do the external or insulation rather than internal, and that would have less disruption, presumably. Would it be cheaper?
It depends on the individual in the home. We first say is do the attic. Make sure the attic is done. That's the first, and it's the cheapest, quickest, easiest one to do. The next one is, if you can, to pump your walls. If you have cavity walls where you can pump them, pump the cavity walls. Then you're looking at external insulation.
So pump them with what?
You pump them typically with bead or foam. There's typically a bond. Most commonly now is what they call a bonded bead, where they put it in and it fills up the cavity. They drill little holes in it, pump in the bead, the bonded insulated bead, and then they fill up little holes again. So you've effectively pumped in insulation between the wall, the wall leaf.
How difficult is that?
That's relatively straightforward and quite simple. So for a smaller, typical three-bed semi-D or a terrace house, it could take an afternoon or two afternoons to do. So it's very quick to do and relatively cost-effective.
And you do that from the outside, do you?
You do that from the outside. The internal wall insulation is not as common, because you have to go through all of the walls. And typically we see that done, Matt, is where somebody is doing a much bigger renovation on their home. So when we look at the grand scheme and say, who does what? Where do they do it? The most common one is the cavity wall pumping. And where you can't pump a cavity wall, we then see external wall insulation. And if you can't do that, then we see internal wall insulation. External is outside, cavity wall is outside, attic is up in your attic, so there's very little disruption.
Okay, and you've explained the cavity. How do you do the external wall insulation?
External wall insulation, we call it the wrap. They literally stick the insulation onto the front of your house and then they render it. So they put the foam boards of insulation onto the front of the house and then they render it. And what it does actually is insulates the house, so it's called the wrap.
Because sorry, then you paint over it again.
You paint over it again, you render over it with a plaster and you can paint, and there's different finishes. And as well as insulating the house, and it does a fantastic job of that, you effectively wrap it in insulation. It also fundamentally transforms the look of your house. So a lot of people do it for the aesthetic, if nothing else. So it improves the insulation and the energy performance of the house, but it's also very aesthetically pleasing.
You've done the attic, you've done the walls. What about the floors?
Floors as well. Absolutely, you can do floors. But what not too many people do floors, because that is the one measure of all of the retrofit measures that has a lot of disruption. Where we see floor insulation done is typically where a home is transferred over, is being gutted, or a complete renovation of the home. So in the on the journey, for your listeners, there's nearly all of this retrofit is no regrets. So if you haven't got your attic done, start at the attic. Then go on to the next measure and the next measure and the next measure. On the other end of the scale is the one-stop shop where you do the whole retrofit in one go. That's where we see the floor insulation be done, because more often than not, with the bigger, deeper retrofits, people are doing additional building works as well. They might be knocking down a wall or extending a kitchen or things like that.
So how much of this then is associated with putting in a heat pump, or does it need to be associated with it at all?
Yeah, well, there is a linkage, all right, because a heat pump for all extents and purposes is like a fridge in reverse. We need the house to be at a certain level of insulation to make the heat pump efficient. So if you have leaks all over your home and you put a heat pump in, it won't be efficient and it'll be running an awful lot at a time.
And then, according to some of our listeners, extraordinary costs. They end up paying more in their bills than they had before they'd put it in.
So the cost piece, there's a couple of kind of moving parts in relation to heat pump. Where you get the insulation level correct in the home, that means it's airtight, it's insulated. So when you put heat into it, it stays in. And a common rule of thumb for your listeners, if you heat a room up, how fast does it go cold? Now, I've got pals of mine that say, as soon as they switch off the heat, it's nearly cold there and then. That means it's not, the heat is not staying in, it needs to be insulated. On the cost piece of it then, you look and say, well, certainly for a retrofit, to make sure that you've got the right size of heat pump and also that it's commissioned right, so it's put in the right way. So what we see is where it's scaled right, commissioned right and put into an insulated home, they're very, very efficient. And we heard, I think, the last time some of your callers come in saying it's worked very, very well for them.
So that's true. There were some who were loved it and others for whom it didn't work. But from what you're suggesting, it that would be that their insulation hadn't been done properly.
Well, that's exactly, you would look at those areas. Because again, a house with four walls and a roof, you're saying, if the house is leaking air, kind of getting cool quickly, you put heat into it, it'll get cool quickly. So the analogy I'd say to your listeners, without getting complicated about heat pumps, look at a fridge. If you have the seal around the fridge and it's broken, the cool air, warm air is leaking into the fridge. So it's the same in a house. If you've got a seal around the house that's broken and you're pumping hot air in from the heat pump, it leaks out. So you got to make sure that piece is right. And also then scaling the heat pump, making sure you've got the right size of heat pump for the home and also the commissioning thereof.
Yeah, tell us a little bit typically, say for a 3-bed semi, what sort of size heat pump would you need? If you have a bigger house, as many people around the country might have, what do you need?
Well, I suppose it would be hard to get into specific sizing of the heat pump, because that is to kind of do it in individual house. But I have the costings here for some of the homes, and the costings are typical heat pumps. So in terms of heat, the costing for a typical semi-detached home, we've looked at across our schemes from last year. To get the home for a BER rating of an E1, which is pretty poor, right up to an A2, which is, as you know, really, really high standard. We're looking at 59,000 average, and we had an average of 22,000 euros in grants. So the net cost to the homeowner was about 37,000 euros. And that fundamentally transformed the energy performance of that home. On the heat pump costings, you're talking about a semi-D, the same thing. The cost of the heat pump, the median cost is about 14,500 euros. And there's a 6,500 euro grant with that as well.
So there's a grant for everything, is there?
A grant for everything, yeah.
How difficult are they to get?
They're not difficult at all, I would counter, because we had 47,000 people last year that applied for and got a grant from us. We had over nearly 60,000 applications in the system last year. So for the individual measure scheme, which is doing one measure at a time, it's literally a question of, it's more or less automatic. You log on, put in your MPRN. We do very quick automatic checks, and basic check is that you didn't get the grant before, so we don't grant it twice. And then we send out an automated letter. So it's a very quick process. We also have a register of contractors.
I was just about to ask that, because this is the big fear for a lot of people. Where do you get a contractor? And if you do get a contractor, can you trust them to actually do a fair price?
Yes. So we would have a register of contractors, and they're SEI registered contractors. And what we do is we check their tax or insurance and make sure they're qualified to do the measure they're purporting to do. That's available on our website. On our individual energy schemes, Matt, we have somewhere in the region about 1,400 contractors on the scheme at the moment that are registered up and down the country. So, you know, it's not difficult to get a contractor. You can go on the when you're applying, you can nominate a contractor, and it's pretty much an automated process. On the one-stop shops, which is doing the whole energy upgrade at one go, it's a bit more of an involved process because there's obviously more involved cost. They will come out and do a much more detailed calculation on your home.
Yeah, but do you have to have all the work done, though, before you can apply for the grant?
No. A really good point, man, for your list. And I think it was raised last time in the interview. You must apply for the grant and get approval before you start work. And that will be common right across the board for any government. There's virtually no government grants that you go off and get work done and apply retrospectively. So it's getting the works approved. You get the online, you do the online application, you'll get an email notification that you've been confirmed, the grant's confirmed, and you progress with your works.
Okay. Tied into that, what about solar panels on the roof? Is that part of the whole thing as well?
Yes, it is. So in our little journey, what we talk about to people, and again, there's people listening to this evening and say, well, where do I start? What do I do? You assess. So where is my home at the moment? And you can do that in two ways. One, if you already have a BER rating, you can get onto our website and you can link in and look at your own BER rating. So assess my home. Where am I at the moment? So I'm in a C3 or B2 or whatever it might be. You then insulate. We say before you do anything, insulate the home. The most cost-efficient thing you can do for your home is to insulate the home. And then the third step is to add renewables. The solar PV comes in under renewables. You put it on the roof and it contributes towards the defraying electrical costs of the home.
Okay. What sort of grants are available there?
Solar PV grant, the maximum grant available is €2,100. And it goes up in terms of per kilowatt hour. But what we're seeing at the moment from that grant scheme, practically everybody's putting in the maximum size scheme. So the vast majority of the grants are €2,100.
Okay. How much roof space do you need, though, for a house? I mean, if you have a particularly big house, do you need to be giving over nearly the entire roof to having various panels in?
Yeah, well, no. What we'd say for a typical home, you're looking at what they call about a 2 kilowatt system. It would be sufficient. That's about 6-7 panels and are about a metre high by about a half metre wide. So your typical 3-bed semi would be able to accommodate a 2 kilowatt system. What we're seeing though in terms of actuality in the ground, we're seeing people maxing out on the number of panels that they put on. Now, there is a dynamics with that. If you've got Velux windows and pointed in a certain direction, you know, not all homes have a flat roof aiming south. So, or if you've got windows in place, Velux windows on the roof, but your typical home will more than accommodate the solar panels required to run that home. But when you go and get the solar panels, they will send out a surveyor and they look at the aspect of your house. They look, have you got any kind of pointy roofs or Veluxes, and see where best they can accommodate. In a small number of homes, they may not be able to accommodate solar panels because of the dynamic of the roof of the home, but by and large, they can.
Do you need a battery then to store the at night time whatever electricity has been generated during the day or power?
No, that's not strictly necessary. But what we'd say there, Matt, is for individuals, and again, every one of your listeners is different, look at their particular use case. Right. So if you've got, say, the two people and they leave the house at 7 o'clock in the morning, come back at 7 o'clock in the evening, and the solar energy is being generated, there may well be a use case there for having a battery. But one of the things we do is associated with solar is what they call a clean export guarantee. So that means for surplus energy that you don't use in the home yourself, you can sell it back to the grid. So that's kind of acting like a battery for you.
One other thing. Can the costs be excessive to people because they're actually looking to do too much, as in they're trying to get to an A1 rating, which may not actually really be achievable?
Yeah, that's a really great point, actually, Matt. And when we started off with the one-stop shop schemes in 2022, some of the early feedback we got was people, you know, not really knowing and saying, look, I want to get my home to an A1, which sounds like a great thing to do. But if you're at a G-rated home, there's an extraordinary amount of work to be done to that home to get it to an A1. When in matter of fact, a B2 is perfectly good. I would draw the analogy there, and it's a bit simple, people are probably more used to this. If you went into a car garage and you bought a mid-range saloon, you'd expect to pay X. If you want to go in and buy a high-end Mercedes or high-end sports car, you pay 3-4X. So to get a home to a B2 standard might be reasonable cost. To get the extra measures to get up to an A1 could be quite disproportionate for some homes.
Anything we've missed?
No, I think we've covered a lot of the ground.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ciarán Byrne, Director of National Retrofit at the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.